Welcome to Out of the Blank.
Welcome to another episode of Out of the Blank Podcast. I'm here with Dr. Carla Peters. Carla, for everyone out there listening, can you tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Hello, everybody. Thank you for inviting me here. I'm Carla Peters from the Netherlands. My main mission is to support and guide for a healthy world. And I've been doing this from the beginning of my career. In the first place, I was working on vaccines against meningitis, pneumococci, and all kinds of bacterial diseases, but also viral diseases like poliovirus. And after that, I became a change manager because I think it's important to have also healthy organizations. And after that, now I have Kobala Good Care Feels Better, and I'm guiding persons who have chronic diseases already for a long time and who can't work. And I try to reintegrate them with personalized integrative care. And that's quite successful. So we are able to get 95% of the people back in work.
That's awesome. When you say personalized integrative care, now what exactly does that mean? Is that like nutrition, like diets? Is that just maintaining kind of like making sure you're taking care of yourself in the best possible way? Because I think we try and look at like, oh, well, this person's doing this, I'm going to try this. Now that might work. That might be the fix for you. But in a sense, everyone kind of needs like training. For instance, I work at a fitness industry place. Everyone has a personalized menu and kind of training thing or a program that they're involved in because each individual body is different. So is that more like what you're talking about with integrative medicine?
Yes, that is, but it's also different disciplines. It's not only nutrition, but it can be that you need also acupuncture or massage or, and this we integrate all together at the right moment and the right place. And we do also diagnostics. So we do quite a lot of medical diagnostics as well. Biochemistry, so the markers in the blood. Because I have a laboratorium background, I've been educated in medical diagnostics, so I can do that as well. So it's a combination. And also, it's not only about the person, but it's also about the work, what happens at work. I've been a change manager for 15 years. I've been guiding many organizations and departments, and even as a CEO of healthcare organizations who were in a crisis. So what I did then is the change management to get those organizations healthy again. And this is at the personal level. It's never at the organization level. It's always to get people with you to the right goal. So what I'm doing in Good Care Feels Better is at a personal level, guiding on lifestyle and nutrition, attitude, workability, these kind of things together. And it's also a combination of mental and physical.
Would you say that like a probably a large step or... I mean, it's hard because we have, especially in the United States, we have a huge population problem. So you're managing at scale. But I consider that a lot of things that seem to be, whether it's the education system, whether it's really anything, it's putting in the individual time. So if you're able, like, it's very, very hard to ask a doctor who might have a load of patients to take individual time with each patient. A lot of times they're just trying to check you up, make sure you're still functioning, and then kind of send you on your way. At least in the States, that's kind of how it is. That's why a lot of people have a problem with healthcare. But I think it's just because, especially during this pandemic, we saw a lot of doctors leave. Now, depending on what facilities those were, a lot of people just go see doctors are refusing what's going on as well too. I didn't really look at it from that angle. I looked at it from how many more doctors are going to have to try and kids that are coming up going to have to be doctors, or doctors are going to have to take on way more patients. That means less individual time per patient. And that becomes an issue where you start to have people that mistrust the medical system, but at the same time, doctors feeling like they're overworked, and that overexhaustion comes with a lot of problems as well too. That doesn't just lead down the route of not being able to care for a patient properly, but also leads to overstressing, to quitting their job. And I think this is a lot of functions that need to be looked at as well too in our medical system. I'm curious, when it comes to just the direction, I bet you've probably been reached out to a couple of times about this pandemic, just with your work with vaccines, for instance. Even if the vaccine wouldn't be a problem, we don't even have to touch that topic just yet. But the concept of where do you think, I don't want to Monday quarterback or look back at a problem, but we're still facing a lot of issues now. And for example, this might be me jumping all over the place. I'm sorry. If I'm speaking fast, let me know. That I was eating and just eat my lunch, and I smelled bleach. I smelled bleach, the strongest smell. It almost knocked me out while I was in the middle of my lunch. And I go, wait a minute, how many times during this pandemic were people wiping down surfaces, were doing all these types of things, using all these contaminants to wipe down from bacteria, whatever, were affecting maybe a child's lungs that are growing, that are affecting something of that scale. That's a thought that came to me way, way later. We're about 3 years into this thing. Nobody was thinking of that 3 years ago, or maybe somebody was, but it wasn't general knowledge of these types of things. You start noticing the small aspects of maybe that is something we should look into. That could be a harmful thing. All these little small factors, and that comes with time, but that also comes with paying attention and not being worried about things, where we can talk about the doctor-patient load. You're worried about so many patients, you're not focused on the individual one. I'm just curious, during this pandemic, which you've probably been reached out to through your work with vaccines, what did you see as a giant thing that we need to handle and we need to start attacking or fixing in a sense?
I think the most important thing is to strengthen the immune system and to take care of the immune system that you're not weakening it. So if you look at the pandemic, there have been a lot of measures which were not proven to be effective against viral diseases, which were mandated. So, for example, there is no real proof for wearing masks, and many people have been using them or needed to use them for 8 hours a day, which is quite a lot. And you need to test beforehand, are they safe and effective, and aren't they harmful for your immune system? Because the whole system of your microbiome is changing. You have a direct connection through your mouth and your nose to your gut. And if you change the oxygen CO2 level, then you get a different microbiome. And then we have the other topic where I've been writing about. We don't exactly know what were in the masks. All kind of toxic substances have been found by several people. So if you look to a child who's wearing such a mask the whole day, for the day it's at the daycare or at school, and they are not able to break down these toxic substances, it means that the liver, the lungs, and the heart are needing to work harder. And especially also, children who are growing need more nutrients to be able to grow. Otherwise, some processes will stop. So then you will develop chronic diseases in the end. And that is where I'm very careful for, because if you are breaking down your immune system, you will get infectious diseases easier, but also all kind of non-communicable diseases like cancer or all kinds of metabolic diseases, but it could even be mental diseases. And that is what you see. You see quite a lot of growing diseases now. It's even sparking after the lockdowns. So the lockdowns have a problem because children were not playing anymore, and elderly people were not going outside, so they didn't get the sunlight, they didn't walk, and you need to walk or to move to be healthy. And if you don't do that and you're sitting and not just eating because you're anxious, and also if you are anxious, then also it's a very important parameter who's breaking down your immune system, and that is known for many years. If your stress hormone is going up, then your immune system is weakened. And if you then give a vaccination, you get a lower response. That's known for many years. But the same is for the toxic substances, which has been found in the mask, graphene oxide or titanium oxide or formaldehyde or whatever, they influence the immune system. And if the immune system is weakening, we know you get either infectious diseases or you get chronic diseases.
Now, during the pandemic, especially where we're at now, they've kind of went back and forth on the mask thing. The CDC says you need to wear them, and they say you don't need to wear them, and then you need to wear this certain mask, and then you don't need to wear this. Now, with that, all that information aside, has there just not been enough studies done on the mask before they incorporated it? Because in the beginning, I was like, I could see masks could obviously stop more infection rates, but nobody, I guess, really thought of what you just said, which was that these masks could contain a chemical or something in it that could actually make your immune system lower, in a sense. Now, at my work, you had to wear a mask anywhere in the beginning, the very beginning, when lockdowns opened back up. It was a way for businesses to function, but then they dropped them. But even now, where there's like, it seems like it's back to normal, like nobody's really asking about like boosters or asking about any of this type of stuff, you're kind of just living life where I'm at, there are still the small percentage of the people that wear masks in their car while they're driving, they're outside wearing masks, they're jogging, they're doing whatever, because they're still a little bit afraid. Now, that's a small portion of society that always kind of has this internalized fear of something, even though there's new information. But it comes from an area of like, there's a lot of things being said, being mandated, being forced that don't really have all the information on that yet. And I might not have a kid, but when I see my little nephew, who all he's known is wearing masks at school, he's four, he's wearing masks wherever, it becomes an issue that when I get in the car and I don't have a mask on me, on my face, and he sees my actual face and goes, like that. And I'm like, what? And you realize that, oh, every time he's ever seen you in public, every time he's ever seen you in this, he's been used to you having a mask, and now it freaks him out when you don't. That is a psychological thing that I think needs to be looked into as well, too. I'm hoping studies are being done on that, but more people are worried about the vaccine, for instance. More people are worried about information on that, whether someone's got their shots, rather than focusing on an issue when it comes to masks. Now, I think masks do help. I don't think that they work probably like they said that they did. Like, you're never going to get COVID if you wear a mask. I don't believe that. I think it's like a chain link fence and you have sand in your hand. It's going to you're still going to get sand through, but it's going to maybe block one or two pieces of sand. That's what I think it's going to be doing. But in an aspect of maybe we've been looking into the wrong thing, if masks can stop outside contaminants from coming in. And honestly, if you have a beard on, like if you have like a big thick beard and you're wearing a mask and you think that's helping, it's not. It's just going to go right under your mask. But what about the contaminants in them? And I think this is information that is hopefully starting to be looked into now, but it's proven, at least from what I've seen in the studies I've read, depending on which side, it seems like this whole thing got political, and that's kind of when it went, where it went sour, I would say. It seems like masks weren't effective at all. I mean, they might have helped with the flu. I've heard that they've helped stop the flu, but even when some people said like, and correct me if I'm wrong too, as well too. I want to hear all the information that you've got.
There are at the Brownstone Institute, there are 161 research papers that demonstrate that the masks don't work. And I started to write about masks in Dutch from the beginning of the pandemic. And I searched for all the research papers that I could find, and it's there. The randomized control trials, they say, are the best to use for approve whether something works, yes or no. And for the influenza virus, it's also found that it doesn't work. And especially not when you wear the cloth masks and it's used by healthy people who are not in a certain building or who are not working in the hospital and don't know how to handle with security and safety the masks, then it hasn't have any use. It's even contaminating.
So it can actually, it can actually keep some of that bacteria inside of it and actually make you even sicker. It's holding that in there.
It makes you sicker. And so it's also not possible to handle it in public in a way that it's safe and effective. It's absolutely impossible. And many people, in the beginning, I was always looking at how do people deal with these masks. And most of them, they put them on when they go into a shop, because in the Netherlands, you need to wear it when you need it. Now, not anymore, but then you needed to wear it when you go into a shop or into certain buildings. So they put it on. And it came from their trousers, the pockets in the trousers or wherever, or they had it on their arm or on their bicycle. And then they put it on and they go into the shop, and afterwards they take it off and they take it together and they put it in the pocket again. But then these masks are full of bacteria.
Well, it seems like it would be effective if it was like a fresh out of the pack. And then once you were done, like you can't just put it in your pocket. You'd have to throw it away and get a whole nother one. But that's not sustainable for a large amount of people just to always have a fresh new mask on them. The only place I know where I live now where they still use masks is doctor's office. They're like, you got to put a mask on your face. Now, I don't at this point to me, like I have one mask in my car. It's in there because I only have to use it whenever I go to the doctor, which is like once every 6 months. Don't criticize me. I have an issue with the medical system. You're a great person. Medical systems. But when it comes to like my car's not like I try and keep it clean, but there's bacteria probably in there that's going to stick to that mask. And then I put that on and then walk into a store. It seems like for them, it just makes them more comfortable. And that's where I think this whole mask thing is still being kind of lost today. It's this idea that you're a good person if you wear one. You know, you're a bad person if you don't. And now it's completely lost its whole medical advances of what it was intended for when we first started using them, which was to protect other people and protect yourself from COVID. Now it's turned into a social thing where it's become, if you're not wearing one, then you must be an anti-vaxxer, you must be this and you must be that. And that's where I see most of these issues with the pandemic get lost as well, too. It's turned into more politics. It's turned into more social type things. And I think that's a big disservice because you're having a lot of people that are very, very confused, much like I am, where they don't know what the hell is the right stuff. And you're just checking the news every week. Like, is this right? Is this right? Did they change? Because it's flipping all the time and you don't know what is correct.
Yes. And that is also what is very confusing to the people. And it's also polarizing. So you have a yes and no community, and the yes and no community can't understand each other anymore. So the dialogue is gone. So the smooth connections between people are disturbed. So if I would be a leader of such a company, I would be very upset. Because how can you get the flow into an organization which you would like to have with good press, with good results, because it's in every organization. It's also, so I'm looking at it now from a change management perspective. If I wanted to have it, if I was guiding change when there was a crisis in an organization, in a healthcare organization, because they were almost bankrupt. So then they hired me to solve the problem. If I don't have people who are connected with the same goal and can communicate freely to each other, there are always conflicts in companies But now there are big obstacles. So how do you get it organized that the polarization is gone? And if we go to the topic from masks, so what I would do as a leader is I would explain what masks can do and what they can't do and what the harm is. And then say to people, you have to decide yourself. But there is no real good explanation, because it's jumping from, for example, in America, there are also the expert leaders who have been saying in the beginning, it's not of any use to use a mask in public. They have said that in the beginning many times. Afterwards, it changed because there were no new studies, but there were new studies. And people need to know that. And they also need to know that what is the harm of long-term wearing of masks? We have never been wearing for such a long time. So that's all new. And if you are used to wear a mask, certain connections in your brain are going down, especially for children, especially the recognition of mimics in the face, which are very important in the communication. The non-verbal communication is about 80%. So what we talk is not as important as how we talk. So if you look to the non-verbal communication, you are learning what is this person really meaning. So that aspect are children missing. And this brain development can't be repaired. So there are real harms which are never thought about. And then we even don't talk about the microplastics, which are also present in the masks. And if we see now the big bunch of biohazards in the environment, and if we know that we are connected to the ecosystem, so to the environment, if the environment is unhealthy, it will always come also in our body. And that is where I'm very worried about, because if we have so much damage in the surroundings. We know that air pollution is harmful, and we have 2 times more biohazards in nature due to the personal protective equipment. And we haven't proven that it works. Why are we doing it? That is my big question.
Do you know any positives about the mask? Because I think, like, because from what I would understand is, like, could we make it like adults wear masks and kids wouldn't have to? Because I think that's like what, I'm not saying that's what I want, but that's what people would hear. Because usually whenever the mask thing, the first statement against it would be that it messes with psychological functions of being able to pick up on social cues. For instance, if you wear a mask right now, I couldn't tell if you were smiling. I couldn't tell anything. I could try by your eyes, but it would be very, very difficult to be able to tell what a person means. It's kind of the example would be like texting. You get a text, you don't know if the person, what context they're speaking this in. It can come off as yelling, it can come off as happy, it can come off as this. That's kind of like the same thing with masks, but I'm just curious when it comes to, like, I mean, there's, I wouldn't say I'm against it. Like, if someone feels more comfortable me wearing one, but I'm more obsessed with the fact of like why that person feels like it's comfortable. I think it's just because something's blocking your face. Like, if we were going to work at a manure plant and we both put on masks, it would help stop some of those contaminants from getting into our breathing pathways. But I feel like those contaminants are thicker because we could smell manure. We can smell when something smells like cow poop, but you can't smell COVID. Like, nobody can detect, dogs can't do that. So the particles have to be completely different, which brings into an aspect, are these masks effective in stopping COVID? Which in my perspective, from just what I just said, I go, I don't really think so. I think it might block maybe 1 or 2 out of the 1,000 that are coming at you, but then we gotta look at the causation of, are masks more damaging wearing them 24/7? Someone's outside in the heat and they have to wear a mask because their job requires them too, because they do construction. Then you're sweating inside of your mask. I sweat from one place on my body, and that is my freaking nose. So when these masks came into business, I was working 8 hours, sweating from my nose, breathing in my sweat, basically. And there were days where I rarely get sick, but there were days that I would work a couple shifts in a row, and next thing I know, I wouldn't feel good the next day. I would feel slimy. I would feel gross. I would feel like my lungs weren't working 100% like they were before, because I was just breathing in horrible bacteria. Where these are now starting to, I guess, maybe become to light, but there's still an overall consensus that you have to wear a mask. Now, I just think at this point, it's about social things. So I'm curious, what do you think would be positive usages of the mask? So we're not just crapping on the mask the whole time, but then also, what are like the overall, I guess, ways that we can kind of get this deprogramming out? Because at this point, I feel like a lot of people are just programmed into thinking this. You know what I mean? Like, because we all know, like, when they go out to a restaurant, for instance, you can wear your mask when you're walking to your table, but while you're eating, you don't have to wear it. I'm like, hold on a second. The virus doesn't just take a break. It doesn't just walk away. Airplanes as well, too. Airplanes just lifted mask mandates. A lot of people are having problems with that. Like, how could this airline not care about your safety? It's like, hold on a second. You're in a small, compact plane that's blowing the same oxygen that's being circulated around the airplane. Do you think you're not getting a bit of whatever if it's on there at all? But people think, oh, I didn't get COVID because I wore a mask, or there wasn't any COVID there, right? Like if you ride an airplane and nobody gets COVID, you didn't say, oh, no one, you know, the masks work. That's not what that is. It's nobody had COVID on the airplane. Like, I'm not wrong. I seem crazy saying that, but I'm not that far off, am I? If I am, correct me.
Now, positive things about masks is, for example, for surgery, if to splash something in the wound of a patient, or that the blood of the patient is coming into the throat of the surgeon, that is. That is why masks are used in the surgeon room. But for viral protection, it is not suitable, not in the way they are made, they are now made. And if there are people busy with making new kind of masks with smaller pores, and that the aerosols wouldn't go through it, but then how can you breathe? And what does it mean for the ecosystem in your body? So for your microbiome, on your skin, so on your cheeks and around your mouth, many people got problems with wearing the masks so many hours a day with skin problems. There are also many people who went to the dentist with smell problems and also mouth problems. And so you are changing the whole system, which is your immune system. It's part of your immune system. The bacteria who are living in your guts and which are also on your skin and also in your mouth are consisting of bacteria, viruses, and all kind of other fungi, whatever. And if this is balanced, you are not ill. But if it's out of balance, then you get ill. So for positive things for wearing masks, I would rather ask for a good risk-benefit analysis and also know what is in the masks, what did they put in it. And is it checked for safety? Is it checked for wearing such a long time? And also for different ages, because the vulnerable people, like the children, the immunocompromised, it's also known that the N95 masks can't be used by pregnant women and also not with people with COPD. So you have to be aware whether it's possible to use for a certain person, and also what are the benefits and what is the possible harm. And every person should take, with this open information, take its own decision what he wants to do with his or her body. So I'm very, what I'm doing always in guiding people is learning them to be a leader of their own body, their own life, but they and where they can find information what to choose. And I think that is the most important. And then you can make the change. But I, at the moment, on televisions and on radio, they get only one side of the information and not the broad information. Like on the Browstone, you can find quite a lot of different information. And that is quite good. Like and the big media, they don't show all the other informations about harms and whatever.
Okay, so what you just said, I agree with 100%. I feel like they're not showing you a lot of information. Like, it's very, very weird. It doesn't just come with the vaccine. It comes with anything. They're really one-siding a lot of information. But if you say that, you get labeled a conspiracy person. So I get to this aspect of, like, there's a lot of information out there, but it all, like, if I type in someone that I know is respected, someone that I know, like Dr. Peter McCullough, for instance, you look him up, he has 667 published medical articles, but if you type in his name on Google, you get a person that says anti-vax conspiracy person. That doesn't make sense for any logical person looking at that. Why would you trust a person that you would label as a tinfoil hat to write 667 published medical articles? So I'm curious, not only a couple of sites that maybe you could list off for people to look at actual studies of masks to show their effectiveness, which I've seen your Twitter and I've seen you retweet a couple as well too, and I'll make sure I link that in the description, but what studies have you seen, depending on what their regions are? Are there other locations that are handling it 100% better than most other, I guess, national or giant countries, for instance, like the United States? There still really isn't a lot of information on masks that I've seen. But I also, like we were just saying a minute ago, media reports one side but doesn't report the other. If you, I want to know what you've seen that makes that whole saying of me saying, if you say that they're only reporting one thing, a conspiracy. I want to know what you've seen that shows that that isn't, that is exactly what's going on. It's not a conspiracy. They are only showing one-sided information, because there's a lot of people out there that aren't believing that. Now, I don't know whether that boils down to, like, hesitancy when it comes to vaccines. Like, they'll only report some information or some of this to not make sure that they're inducing vaccine hesitancy. But I feel like you should have all the information at your disposal, the good and the bad. Like, if you tell me that this, if you wear a mask, it might, you might pick up some chemicals or some bacteria from it, but overall there's this benefit to it, then I wouldn't mind, you know, I wouldn't be mad. I wouldn't be pursuing it. But the fact is that they're only saying, no, masks don't have any negative side effects and there's only this positives. And I'm like, man, there's negatives in everything in life. Like, there's nothing you don't do in life without a risk to it. So it's like, you can't just hide some of the papers and choose to show me the other. You know what I mean? Like, that sounds crazy, me saying that. And people listening will be like, this sounds like conspiracy. No, it's not. It's real. It's information that is being blocked to you. And I don't think that's a proper way to build up trust, which I think is the overall most effective tool you need in anything in life, whether it's just normal social communications, but also medical established communications as well, too. You need to build trust with your doctor. You need to build trust with your system of Medicare or medicine, I would say.
Yes. Now, with this, I fully agree. I think all persons should be able to find all the information which is necessary to make their own decision about their medical situation. And that is, and this is also promoted. It is called shared decision making. So that the doctor and the patient know there is an open relation between the doctor and the patient. And they get all the information, and based on what the patient or the person is feeling or doing, they can decide themselves for what would be best and have that decision in dialogue with the doctor. But for the whole group, if you say you can't speak to every individual person on wearing a mask or not, but what you have to do as a government is to give the right information. And I think Sweden has done quite well in this perspective. Also on the lockdown and the measures. And they have given people the choice what to do. Masks have never been a mandate there, only for a short period in buses and trains, but for the rest it wasn't. And there is a very good documentary, which I will send you the title afterwards, which really shows how different Sweden acted in contradiction to UK with a lockdown and non-lockdowns, and why this was chosen. And they have given the elderly people to make the choice what they wanted and to be safe. And this is very good. You can see that quite good in this documentary. So I always say, look at this documentary and then it will become clear. There is much more information. And also Anders Tegnell is working on based on research papers. And he said, I'm dealing with what we know from history, also from research papers. And that is the way how he led the pandemic there with very good results at the end. And he got a lot of comments. But there's another country, it's a small country, it's the Faroe Islands. They have also done it quite differently. So there are examples who did it quite different, give the confidence to the people that they can decide themselves and they get more trust and the people did more what they want. And if I compare that on how I have been a change leader, I did the same. I gave them open information. I I explained them how what the organization was and where we were and what was needed to be done, and asked them if they had ideas how to help to come to the to better outcomes. And then you get the people with you. But if you only say to the people, you have to do this and this and that, and if you don't do, you are bad or whatever, it will not end to a good... At the end, you will have a very bad result. And that is what is happening now. You have polarization between groups of people. And the results aren't better. There is the countries with a lot of lockdowns are... like Shanghai at the moment, it's very, very dangerous what is happening there. And it's also making people very, very scary. And if you look then, the immune system is really going down. So people are getting ill. And that is what you see in all those countries who have been very having very heavy lockdowns, the infections raised. They didn't go down. So that is what I think. So I also think on this aspect, the Great Barrington Declaration did a very good job.
So I have two questions for you. One is about masks. Do you think that masks actually probably increased infection rates, I would say? Not just with like COVID, but a more compromised immune system. The reason why I say that is, how many people neglected their hygiene all because I don't have to brush my teeth, I'm just going to put on a mask? Or how many people said, there are people that did that. I know plenty of people. And actually, there's a large amount of people out there that choose to still wear masks only because they don't like the way their teeth look. Now, I don't have model teeth, but if you're telling me like that there isn't someone out there who has one tooth who's like, I'm going to wear a mask, this is perfect for me. I have a buddy. I'm not going to say his name because I love him so. But I'm just saying there's this lack of hygiene that people chose. Oh, I don't have to really shower to go to the store. I'll just put on a mask and a hoodie so it covers up most of like the parts that people would see. There are people that were doing that during the pandemic as well too, when they went to the grocery store, even if it was first thing in the morning, instead of spending an hour and a half to get ready like some people do. Maybe that's just the States thing, but I know plenty of people that did those things. I think hygiene, for instance, do you think that it not only with the bacteria that would stay inside the mask, but do you also you think that maybe people lacked hygiene on an aspect of using the mask as a sense of cover up? It's kind of like putting on a Halloween mask in a sense. You don't have to put on eyeliner if you're going to put on a Halloween mask, right? So you neglect putting on eyeliner, you neglect putting on things that you would consider hygiene, brushing your teeth, whether that's shaving your beard, whether that's doing whatever, because it's to save time. And that was kind of where it got adopted to, much like we talk about with the mask, for instance. I think the polarization comes from a lack of information. See, there's a large amount of people that go, they're not telling you everything. Like me, I don't think they're telling you everything. But then there's other people that go, that's conspiracy talk. They're telling you everything. And I think that does lead to that polarization, that lack of information being out there. And that's how this thing got adopted into a sociological, I would say, function. It has now essentially became a stigma or a type of thing that people can label you as that you fit in this category or you don't. You care about other people if you wear a mask. And if you don't, you don't. Well, look, I'll put on a mask if someone feels more comfortable that I put one on. But ask me, but have you seen that happen during the pandemic? So this leads into my second question. My second question would be time under tension. How many people's bodies are subconsciously fixing their immune system and worried about that? Or how many people have been on high alert? When you see planes, someone's not wearing a mask on a plane, they're all angry and they're all flustered. Right then, you're already not, your body's already focused on making sure that they can pump blood to your whatever to be able to fight or be able to be in this aggressive state and focus on that. And it's not worried about repairing itself. Like during sleep, your body repairs, it heals, it does all these types of things. When you're focused on yelling or screaming at someone, it's rushing it all the blood towards those parts or adrenaline, all these types of things. It's trying to function those. And now your immune system is more compromised. I'm not wrong in saying that. That's like, give me a round of applause.
And I will first answer your last question. And we have a sympathetic and a parasympathetic nerve system. And the sympathetic nervous system is the flight fight reaction. And then your adrenaline is going high. And the parasympathetic nerve system is especially when you're in rest, relaxed, sleeping. But the reason why persons, for example, during the pandemic couldn't sleep well is because of the reactions you just mentioned. They were a lot of time during the day, they were in the sympathetic nerve system. So they had a high adrenaline. And at a certain point, you can't switch anymore. So your body can't anymore. It's always in the sympathetic nerve system, and then you can't sleep. I think this is the major problem of the pandemic, because, and that is also what you see in anxiety of in anxiety problems and depression. People have had too much stress on the body. Because they have been made so afraid for the virus, while it's for people below, say, 65 years, it was quite known, it was known quite soon that it wasn't that dangerous. So it would have been much better to stimulate persons to work on increasing their immune system, strengthening their immune system. And if you are continuously in the flight fight reaction, your immune system is going down. So you get the opposite. So then you get more infections or more chronic diseases. And that is what you're seeing now. If we go back to your first question about this wearing masks to hide myself, if you wear a mask, your hygiene is more important than ever. Because you're getting more bacteria around your skin or on your face, around your mouth, and through your mouth, all these wrong substances it could be toxic substances or fungi, because most people don't wash these masks every day, and you have to clean them every 2-3 hours. They also don't do it, and it's very expensive to buy a new one every 2-3 hours. So they get a lot of stuff inside they normally don't get. So this person with a bad breath will get a more, it will become even worse by wearing masks, unless he's cleaning his mouth every evening and every morning very good. So he needs more time to go to the supermarket than just not wearing a mask and keeping a smile on his face.
See, if he's already neglecting brushing his teeth, he's not brushing his mask every single night. That's not
No, and I think the most important thing is that people understand that hygiene of your mouth is very important, but also that too much hygiene is also not good. Because if you're using, for example, what many people will have learned during the pandemic, to put hand gels on their hands whenever they come into a shop, and sometimes they had 10 shops on a day, it were all alcohol dispensers, and this alcohol is going within the body, so you are exposed to more alcohol than ever. So with everything you do, you have to think, what does it mean for my body? It's not harmless. If you do that a lot, if you do it one day a week, it doesn't matter that much. But for example, if children go to school, and I've heard stories from children that they had to do it every hour, then you can ask, then I'm asking, what does it mean? How many alcohol do these children get into the body? And what does it mean for their liver? Because they have to detoxify it. And that is where I'm worried about. But the infection for children, the virus, is not, for healthy children, it's not dangerous, because their natural immune system can handle it quite well. And also they've met already other coronaviruses, which have a cross-reactivity on the T-cell immune system, so they can handle it. They are already protected. And that's why you see why these children don't have many infections. So for the hygiene measures and also the masks for children, which is of no use, they are very harmful. That is what I think.
I think there's a lot of people out there that agree with you. I agree too. I think I more look at it from the psychological aspects, because I don't know the whole science of bacteria. I mean, I honestly think there should be a study done on how many our immune systems now compared to our immune systems 10 years ago, when people could still drink water from a hose. Like, I feel like, I mean, your mouth is the main focal point of any bacteria or anything getting inside of your body, only because it's what you shove food into. It's what you open up your mouth when you take a nice breath outside. You get some pollen in your lungs. But I also wanted to hit this topic as well, too. Now, I had spoken to a vaccine injury lawyer, and he was pro mandates. He was pro wear your mask. He was pro get your shot. It's not about your freedoms. I wanted to get your thoughts with working with vaccines for so long, maybe not this particular one, but just vaccines in general, because I don't think there's really enough information that's being let to the public known about the adverse reactions to this thing. Is it good? Is it bad? I don't necessarily care if you do. I just don't like mandates. I'm not a big person about forcing someone to do something without all the proper information being let into them. And I think my example is people try and relate this vaccine to the polio vaccine. I don't necessarily think it is that, because it is a different method of using this vaccine. It's the first mRNA one that we've really experienced. And a lot of people don't understand that you can't relate this to a past vaccine, because this is a new one. And I think the reason why we went down this new pathway was because you had to do something that you thought was going to be more effective overall, rather than something like the polio vaccine that took so long to make. This was trying to be produced as fast as possible to recover with the pandemic that we were currently facing, which I think that was a little bit of cutting corners in a sense. It might have been seen as innovative. And I don't think it's like you've seen it. You can still get COVID. You can still do all these things. But when you say that you're just, especially being forced into a position to take it, I know friends who have had to quit their jobs because their jobs mandated it. This is where I start to have issues. And I just wanted to get your thoughts as an immunologist. And like I told you in the beginning, I'm not anti-vax. I'm just not pro with this one, because I've heard a lot of horror stories and talked to a lot of people that can show you like we were talking about data that may not be the public narrative. And I feel like a lot of people should be at least knowing what they're putting into their body as well too.
Let's start with the mandates. I think it's of no use to use mandates for vaccinations, because every person's body is different. So the side effects for someone could be very, very harmful, more harmful than dealing with the virus. And that is because there are so many people with chronic diseases. There are so many people who are taking medicine. We don't know about the effects of the vaccine on a medicine and the other way around, because the vaccine is not only mRNA, there's more in it. This not only the mRNA, there is also the pegylated nanoparticle. So it's a combination of things. You have to think about whether it's good or not to immunize. And I think it should always be, like it was before, a personal decision.
I agree with you on that.
And so that is the beginning of do you vaccinate, yes or no? And I think it's for all the vaccines, because no one knows your body better than yours. No one knows better which side effects you already had with previous vaccines. And then is the question, if you had serious previous side effects, is it worth taking the risk, yes or no? And I agree with you, the mRNA are the first vaccines in which are used. So we don't know much about it. And if we now are looking to what's coming out about side effects, about it is not, it was told that it would protect against transmission of infection, but it's not. Because it's even that in the countries with a lot of vaccinations, the infection rate is very high. And then the question is, there are also new research articles which are coming out. What is it really doing in the human body? So if you would take the vaccine, it's important to know how is your immune system, is it a risk to get the virus. We also know that the natural immunity is far more better than the vaccines. That is known from research. So I'm not talking about what I'm finding, what my personal opinion is. It's just what is in the research papers, which are coming out from the last year. So the comparison between natural immunity and people who were vaccinated, then you see that the protection in the people who had natural immunity is strong and robust, and the immune response is going down more slowly than the vaccinated group. And of course, that's per person is the difference. But if you had a natural infection, you are protected.
Yeah, I had I got it naturally. I wouldn't say I got it naturally. I got it from someone who was boosted and double vaxxed. So, and I'm not vaccinated at all. And like I said, I'm not anti-vax. I don't even take Tylenol. I let my body naturally try and build up an immune or try and beat anything really it faces. And that's why I rarely get sick. But when I do get sick, it's horrible. But I had COVID. It was one bad day for me. I still get a little bit of brain fog from it. I don't know where that comes from. Because I naturally have ADHD, so my thoughts are always kind of out there. So hopefully more studies will be done on the long-term effects and hopefully managing some symptoms as well, too, possibly fixing. But I think, like, for me, I'm not a herbal remedy type person at all, but I do think that my body naturally beating anything without adding anything to it, just making sure I'm eating proper and doing all this, helps me not get sick as much. Now, when we talk about, here's might be a question out of left field, but it happens to do with vaccines. Do you think that the vaccines caused variants? Because whenever I type that in, and I've talked to a couple people that think that it does, not past ones, I'm talking about this one specifically.
That is what they say, what is described, it's escape by variants. The coronavirus is an RNA virus who's mutating quite fast. So it could be that it's due to the vaccination and that you have all kind of processes in the body that you that the virus tries to escape and it's not. The immune system is not working strong enough to get rid of the virus. That could be a possibility. On the other hand, it could also be like the Omicron variant. It could also be the just a natural mutation of the virus, because the virus is always it's becoming weaker in the time. That is a natural occurrence, but they know from former viruses, so not from this coronavirus but for other viruses. So it could be both. I don't say it is definitely a cause of the vaccine, but it could be a cause of the vaccine, and it could also be a natural occurrence of what's normally happening to viruses mutating to a less virulence virus. And it's also the case that if there is more natural immunity, which there is now, then that might be the reason why the virus becomes less virulent. So if you look there was, I think 85% or 95% immunity, while not the whole body, and it was from blood donors, while not the whole population was vaccinated already. And if you look to countries like Africa, there have been found antibodies in persons to this coronavirus, while they didn't know whether they have been infected. There was no tests that there was an infection. So there are many reasons why it could be that there is a mutation of the virus. That is what there are many powers in the human bodies which are creating this different, this going down of the virulence of the virus during an epidemic or each season, whatever.
Yeah. I always looked at the countries like Israel, where they're rolling out their fourth booster shot, and then a month later, an article came out that says that they have the largest COVID infection rate, and it's highly among the young unvaccinated. Now, that's what the article title said, but then when you clicked into it, they were calling people that had two shots and maybe one booster unvaccinated, and you start to realize that's not unvaccinated, but that's
no,
how they...
No, that's not unvaccinated, no.
That's how they added in there. And I look at, like, to get a variant, you have to add something to the original. And that's kind of like what this shot is, in a sense. I mean, it was supposed to, and it didn't cure COVID. It didn't make sure you never got it. Instead, it might have just altered some of your genes, for instance, or some of the way that you receive a virus, I would say. And this thing had to adapt to do that. Now, that's where I tackled it from. Now, whether that's true or not, whether that's up to debate, or whether that's information we don't know yet, I have no clue. I just look at the thing that scares me the most, which is mandates a little bit, because I think that does take away your freedoms. But also, I think they're sales pitching it to make it that if they're not in the same group as what the narrative is, then you're an enemy and you have to be tried for that. And what scares me also is when they say the word endemic, this is never going to end. You can't tell me that doesn't play a psychological effect on so many people. We learn to get through problems, and they've just put a boulder in front of you and welded the door shut like they do in Shanghai. So that's an issue.
Yes, but if it's endemic, it means it's just around and people can handle it. So the infection would be, it wouldn't be a severe disease. People don't come in the hospital anymore. Only the people who have a very, very weak immune system. But that is with every virus. That is with the influenza. That is what we know from the seasonal effect. And I didn't talk about this, but yet, but what is very important is that the coronavirus is a seasonal virus. So it's connected to the winter times. And the winter times is when there is a low vitamin D. And we know that vitamin D plays a very important role in the immune system. And not only in the immune system, it's involved in many reactions in the human body. And if you look at the comorbidities of the people who are at risk for this virus, then it's obesitas, then it's cardiovascular disease, it's elderly age, and elderly age is known as a senescent immune system. This is it are frail people who are not strong anymore, and this is also seen in the immune system. And that is also known from other vaccines that, for example, the influenza vaccines, they don't work very well in elderly people. Well, elderly people are most at risk of getting acute respiratory distress syndrome. So it's more complex, and that is why I'm still saying every time, strengthen your immune system, because that is your power, your personal power. And be your own leader in your own health. And the most important is, if you know how your body is, if you know that, or you feel that your body is strong, then most of the time your immune system is also okay. But if your body is very frail, like with elderly people who can't walk and for example, at the age of 80 and have 86 and have 3 or 4 chronic diseases, so comorbidities, then you know that the immune system is not at a strong level. And then still you can ask, what could I do to strengthen my immune system to prevent that I get infections and that I respond well to a vaccine, what I'm taking, if I decide to do that. So that is my main message, is strengthen your immune system, because that is the most important. And what I mean with that, because some doctors say, yeah, but if you overstrength your immune system, it's not working. I mean, a balanced immune system, because autoimmunity is, of course, also not okay. But if your immune system is strong and that is feeling a strong health, then you will get, you can deal with viruses, you can deal with bacteria, because that is imbalanced. The immune system is keeping the ecosystem in your body, because we have all things what we need, we have in our body. Also the toxic substances or the air pollution. If your body is healthy, it can deal much better with it. But if you are wearing masks the whole day for 2 years, your immune system is breaking down. That is, at least you have more risk that the immune system is weakening. And if you have a weakened immune system, you can't handle with all is going on.
I think I stand in the same boat with you with supporting your immune system, and it needs to be by case per case basis. I think we agree on most, every single thing. I really appreciate you giving me your time to be able to chat as well too. Is there a place where people can find your links? Like, do you want to promote your Twitter, your site as well too?
I have, my site is goodcarefeelsbetter.com, and that is kobalagoodcarefeelsbetter.com. And my Twitter account is CarlaPeters3.
Okay.
So there you can find me. And you can also sometimes see posts of me on HB de Tijd was in the Netherlands, but that is for people who speak Dutch. And in English, I have 4 papers on the Brownstone Institute, which might be very interesting for you to read.
I'm going to link everything in the description. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.
And if people want to mail me, they can find the contact paper at goodcarefeelsbetter.com.
And I'll link it all in the description. Thanks for listening to this episode of Out of the Blank.